This is the Motion Church Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like more information about Motion Church, you can always visit our website at motionchurch.com. If you'd like to contribute to what God is doing here at Motion, you can do that at motionchurch.com/give. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
All right, what's up, everybody? Yeah, all right. Man, I guess the cooler weather's got everybody feeling frisky a little bit. It's good. Hey, we're so glad you guys are here with us. We consider this the best hour of our week. I think it's an incredible way to start your week. I think, how many of you know that sometimes Monday hits you hard? Anybody know what I'm talking about? Man, when you go back to work, you go back to school, maybe tonight when you go back with your family, you're like, oh, Lord. Right? And so, man, let's just take some time. Let's recenter. Let's reorient our lives around Jesus, the highest priority, the most important thing we could possibly do. Man, there's not a better way to kick things off. So we're starting a new series today called Word Matters. Word Matters. And kind of the idea of the series is that our words matter. Right? And so matters are affairs, right? These topics of discussion. We're going to look at some topics of discussion around the fact, the truth that our words matter. And so if you've been here any length of time, you know that I like words. Words are very, it's funny, I like words, but I don't care to use words. Because I don't, like, I have the typical or stereotypical women say this number of words in a day, and men say this number of words in a day. I'm probably slightly below the threshold. The most talking I do all week is right here. This is it. Shelly, stop. Shelly gets so frustrated because Shelly, she exceeds the threshold for the number of words that women use. So my thought is, my thinking, my logic is that, well, you're saying enough for both of us, so I don't really need to say anything. It works out really well. Right? Now, obviously, that's not true, but I love words. I love that words are these powerful little instruments that we can use to convey so many different things. We believe that words have tremendous power, right? Let's start at the basic and obvious. What is a word? We all know that words are kind of these forms, these elements of speech. Here's the definition of a word. This is dumb, but we're going to do it anyway. Words are a single, distinct, meaningful element of speech or writing used with others. And then it's really interesting. It says in parentheses, or sometimes alone. Words are sometimes used alone because I don't know about you, but I talk to myself. And we're going to talk about that in a few weeks, right? So it's sometimes used with others or sometimes alone to form a sentence. We know what words are, right? That's very obvious. That's something we all have a pretty good understanding of and grasp of. But here's what I think we fail to remember from times to times. We know what words are, but I think we fail to remember the power that words have. Right? I mean, we all know what a word is, and we know a lot of them, and some of them are not so good. But we forget the power that our words have. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, it says this, "The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit." The tongue, our words, the things that we say to each other, the things that we say to ourselves, there is the power of life and there is the power of death in our words. I don't know that it gets much more powerful than life and death, right? Like you can have all of the in-betweens, but those are the extremes. Life and death are in the power of our words and our tongues. And so because we recognize, we realize, we take some time here just to say, hey, I understand that my words have power. We're going to look at some ways to harness this power. Has anybody been to Niagara Falls? Does everybody know what Niagara Falls is? All right, good. It is spectacular, and it's, for whatever reason, it's cooler to look at it from the Canadian side than it is from the American side. I don't know. I can't explain it, but maybe the view is just slightly better, or you're just like, oh, I'm in a foreign country, ha, 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 right? Or eh, right, because that's more Canadian. And so Niagara Falls is this incredibly powerful force, and somebody along the way was like, hey, you know what would be a good idea? Let's not waste this power. Let's harness this power. And now it's used to generate a tremendous amount of force and power and electricity subsequently, right, for a large region surrounding the power. And I think when it comes to our words, they have a tremendous amount of power. Let's harness the power. That was a really good analogy, and you guys were just, yeah, just let it go, all right? So here's our topic for the day. This is the title. If you take notes, note takers are history makers. I would suggest you take notes. Or you're nothing. No, I'm just kidding. Say powerful words, and I'm just an idiot and let it slip. Speaking of slip, loose lips sink ships. Loose lips sink ships. That's our title for the day. Now, this has happened just maybe coincidentally for, the last 6 weeks. It seems like every single week, some sort of like history has made its way into the message, and it just so happens to be like military history, and I apologize. I told you guys last week that it was a Geico commercial. I was wrong. I saw it again this week. It's a Progressive commercial, and the guy's sitting on his couch, and he's reading a book about submarines, right? And he's like, who else reads books about submarines? My dad, right? I'm getting old, okay? Get over it. It is what it is. And so I think it's fascinating. I love history, and I love reading about these things. But during World War II, they came up with, when I say they, you know how we do this? We're like, they? Like, well, who is they? So we'll just say the powers that be, maybe the government, maybe the military, the militaristic brass, right, the leaders, came up with a slogan for keeping morale high for the troops. And the slogan was, they actually made all of these posters, and apparently they would put the posters in churches, in schools, in public buildings, and the slogan was, loose lips sink ships. Loose lips sink ships. Loose lips sink ships. And because we trust the government so much, and we always have, there are like different beliefs about the meaning of what they were trying to communicate. So it's funny because they didn't trust them back then either, right? And so there are people who think there are two different meanings to the loose lips sink ships. The first one is kind of the obvious, hey, if we are loose with our words, if we're discouraging with our words, if we're not careful about what we say to each other, it brings down the morale and the productivity of the army, and we want to be successful, and so let's make sure that we watch what we say to each other to keep our morale high, right? Loose lips sink ships. And the other, this one's kind of the more nefarious or kind of the more interesting or sinister, is that they believe that basically there were German spies on every corner, and that the words that you said could be overheard by somebody, and they would take that and use it against us so that loose lips sink ships, right? Isn't that interesting? Is anybody else like, oh, that's so cool? Okay, you guys are not. You're not nerds. That's fun. That's fun. And so here's what's interesting. So kind of coming back to the first thing. The one of the beliefs of this phrase was that when we talk negatively or we spread rumors, also known as prayer requests in church. Y'all know, listen, I just need y'all to pray for... because y'all know what she did. Anyway, so they wanted to stop some of the negative talk and the gossip and the rumors and the prayer requests. And so they were like, hey, loose lips sink ships. So kind of it would discourage, and y'all stop it. That was funny. That was good. Yeah. It might discourage or diminish the productivity of the troops, of the morale of the troops. And so the modern version of this, I was thinking about how this would look kind of in modern terms if they had to rewrite the poster. It used to be loose lips sink ships. Now it's loose tweets sink fleets. Right? The point is the same, right? Like having a tight rein on your words is powerful. It can be life or it can be death to those who are around us, right? So while it was clever at the time, it's what an incredible marketing slogan, because things that rhyme just stick with us, and they got to be true if they rhyme. Everybody knows that. It actually has kind of a more antiquated origin, and so it's really interesting that this is something that's been talked about and kind of gone over long before World War II, and we're going to look at it because it's relevant to our conversation today. James chapter 3, verses 2 through 6. And I love the way it starts out. It says this, we all stumble in many ways. And that's the whole sentence, right? There's no qualifiers or anything that follows. It's just that, hey, we all stumble in many ways. And this is specifically talking about our words, our tongues. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. That's why it started with, we all stumble in many ways, right? Because I don't know anybody who is perfect in what they say all of the time. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. And then he kind of transitions to speak to the power that our words have. Verse 3, it says this, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Right? Isn't it interesting, these massive, majestic horses? Have you ever noticed how muscular horses are? Like, they're just so incredibly powerful, but if you put a bit in their mouth, you can determine where this powerful creature goes, the direction that it goes. So we can turn the whole animal. In verse 4, it says this, or take ships as an example. Loose lips, sink ships. Y'all see what we did there? Okay, take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Now, isn't it interesting that it talks about the pilot? I am just about sick of, and I don't know where you land on this, but I'm just about sick of everybody blaming everybody else for their problems. Right? Man, can we just own our problems? Can we own the decisions that we make and the consequences that come along with it? You are the captain of your ship. And where it is your fault. Good or bad, right? That can be one of several, you know, whatever it looks like, however that plays out. So, wherever the pilot wants to go. And this is what it says. This is the connection between the ship and the control of the ship being the rudder, a very small object. It says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. Now, this is where it gets kind of heavy. Verse 6, like if you read it, you're like, dang. And then you read it again and you're like, dang, dang. Verse 6, it says this, the tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. But it was just a word, right? It wasn't that big. I just told them what I was thinking. I just let them know what my opinion is. It's just a word. Our words are incredibly, incredibly powerful. So we're going to look at this from just two different angles today. Things I think that I like to think of like application implication. What are the implications of this and what are the applications of it? So we're going to look at two different perspectives of this idea that, man, our lips, our words, our tongues are incredibly powerful. And if we're not tight with them, if they're loose, they can sink the ship known as our lives. So the first point is this, driving the dinghy. Just because I had to get it in there somehow, some way. We're talking about ships. So let's talk about what is driving the dinghy. I think, like, let's say collectively we're on a large ship. Some of you are on a cruise ship. Some of us are on a battleship. You figure it out, right? Shelly lives on a cruise ship. I kind of prefer the battleship, like guns and pow, pow, bang, bang, pew, pew, right? So collectively we're on a large ship, but I think our lives, when you look at kind of the individual efforts and course of our life, it's kind of like a dinghy or a John boat, right? It's a smaller boat, but we determine where it goes. And so I think we have to figure out what is driving the dinghy. I believe our goal as followers of Jesus is to keep as tight a rein on our words as possible. It doesn't mean that we do not talk. It just means that we are careful with what we talk about. And even further, not just what we talk about, but how we talk about what we talk about. Because, you know, it's not always what you say. It's how you say what you say that is important. Because sometimes, y'all, I say some good stuff, but I say it all wrong. I know you would never do that. But sometimes I say things, and it's true, it's good, but I said it all wrong. And so it's not just what we say, but how we say what we say. So we want to keep as tight a rein on our words as possible. Did you know that there is a direct connection between our words and our hearts? There is a direct connection between what we say and what's happening in our hearts. I had a, we'll call it a business transaction this week with an individual, and she was just mean. Like, just bitter. Y'all ever mess with, like, the curmudgeons, the cantankerous old souls who are just angry at everything? Everything. And you try and try and try to make nice and charm and, like, you know, bring down some of the tension, and it's just not going to happen? Have y'all ever had any situations like that? Now, I don't know. I'm persistent. Like, I have this stupid thing where I think in some ways, like, I'm the police in some situations, and that's not right. I'm going to make it right. Like, if I hold the door open for you and I'm like, you know, I'll say something like, you know, have a good day, and you don't say anything, I'm like, never mind. Or, you're not welcome. As if it's my responsibility to elicit a response from them. So anyway, I'm in situations like this from time to time, and I'm like, what is wrong with you? And I want to try to fix what's wrong with them. And then I kind of just, as I thought about it more and I thought about it more, and obviously I was like, there was some frustration, but it was like one of those very clear indicators that what was coming out of her was just indicative of what's inside of her, right? The bitterness of her words is just kind of an indicator of the bitterness of her heart. And I can't fix that. There's only one person that can fix that, and I ain't even gonna touch it, right? I ain't gonna try. I ain't going there. Luke chapter 6, verse 45, it says this. Jesus so masterfully phrases this. He says, a good man or a good woman who does business transactions with me this week, out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. An evil man or evil woman who does business transactions, right? An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. The connection between our heart and our mouth. Out of the abundance of our heart, the mouth speaks. Now, it's easy to talk about other people and how much they bother me when, you know, it's very clear that what's coming out is kind of this indicator of what's within. I've also noticed in my own life how much this is true. Let me just talk about me for a minute, right? Because I know none of you guys struggle with this. This is not an issue that anybody else has. I'm the only one. I have noticed that the tightness of my lips or the looseness of my lips is directly connected to the tightness of my relationship with Jesus. Jesus, that's one word, not Jesus. I just glitched like a, you know, what is it? One of these days, I think church is going to be like a hologram and the pastor's going to be up here holographic, right? We're not doing that, but I'm just saying. It would be pretty cool. I think. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. I'll be here next week. So anyway, let's bring this thing back. I've noticed that in my own life that the looseness of my lips is directly connected to the tightness of my relationship with God. Like when we're tight, right? When the relationship is strong, when I'm spending time with God, like really developing that relationship, when I feel like I'm getting to know him better because you never know him enough. There's so many more things to know. It is a lot easier. In fact, it's almost effortless to keep a tight rein on your lips. On the other hand, when that relationship is not as strong as it should be, you know what happens to me? When my relationship with God is kind of on the back burner, now we would never say that, but our schedules Our schedules would kind of indicate that, right? Now we're not gonna admit that, especially us, you know, good church folk. Like, you know, Jesus is our first priority, but everything else prioritizes above him on our schedules, but that's another story, right? So whenever my relationship with God is not the first priority that it's supposed to be, I've noticed that my lips kind of get loose. I feel a need to get the last word. This is just me. This is not you. I know that nobody else struggles with this. I feel the need to get the last word, even with my wife, which is stupid. Because even if you get the last word, you still lose. Anyway, I just feel the need to get the last word. I feel a need to prove a point rather than make a difference. I like proven points. I'm in my mind, at least, I'm like factual, right? I'm like facts, hashtag facts. That's what we do. I like facts. I like logic. I like information that's linear, and I like kind of the application of those linear logical thoughts. And when people are like, you know, more like Shelley is very abstract and unicorns and rainbows, and so it kind of makes things. She was a unicorn for Halloween, as an example, right? And so she was like, and you're going to dress up as a stallion. I was like, good, I don't have to dress up. Yeah, y'all get the reins. Bring him in. So when my relationship with God is not where it should be, I have a tendency to want to get the last word. I have a tendency to want to prove a point rather than make a difference. I also have a tendency to want to criticize people rather than inspire people. You know what? I like to point out problems rather than point out solutions. Why are my children being so loud? It's like they know, right? I want to point out problems rather than point out solutions. I want to tear people down instead of build people up. I want to, it's almost as if you kind of revert or default to, for me, again, I know you guys don't struggle with this, but you default to your junior high plethora of your mama jokes. Because I got them. And like when the looseness starts to take hold, those things just start to surface, right? I'm like, yo, mama so fat. Boy, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You got her own zip code. That's just where I'm at, right? Now, on the other hand, when my relationship with God is thriving, and it's kind of on the path, the tightness is there, the looseness disappears. When my relationship with God is where it's supposed to be, I've noticed that my desire to be right is not quite as strong. Now, it's always there. Devil, right? It's always there, but it's just not quite as strong. It's more subdued. It's something that you can manage. It's something that doesn't always seem to dominate, because that's what, have you noticed, have you got people in your life that want to dominate the conversation? Here's where I'm at with that. I'm like, you can just have it. Matter of fact, I'm not going to say anything. Just take it. I'm out. Bye. Dominate that. Dominate by yourself, fool. Looseness of the lips, right? So my desire to be right is not quite as strong. I really do, when my relationship with God is where it's supposed to be, my heart is where it's supposed to be, I really do want to encourage and inspire people. Man, I love to see people who you know are struggling to feel just a sliver of hope, to inspire people in spite of the circumstances that they're going through, the things that they're going, that they have going on in their lives. When I'm at a place like this, in times like these, I want to call out the potential in people in spite of their obvious flaws. Y'all know what we do. Yeah, and I think we're just kind of geared like, as a matter of fact, let's go back to the loose tweets, sink fleets. There was a study that was done on Twitter, based on Twitter, that information that was negative or not true travels 6 times faster than information that is actually true. Right? Information that is negative or not true, kind of the fake news, actually travels 6 times faster than real news or good news. Now, the problem with that is once it's out, how do you get it back? Because people have already seen it, and they've already formulated their thoughts based on the bad information that they got. What are you going to do with that? That is the power of words. Now, I think there's kind of it's very clear that we are prone to, inclined to negativity. And so when we see people and they have their problems, we have a tendency to focus on their problems rather than their potential. But when my relationship with God is where it's supposed to be, it's easier for me to focus on their potential rather than their problems. In fact, like, I have a tendency, when everything is right, when the heart is right, I have a tendency to want to point out solutions to problems rather than be like just like everybody else and point out all of the problems in the world that we live in. Have you ever noticed that? Like, everybody is so brilliant. Everybody's so smart. They're savants when it comes to pointing out the problems in the world. We're geniuses. But if we were really that smart, wouldn't we point out some solutions to the problems? I mean, let's be honest, right? Anybody, it doesn't take much of an IQ to identify the problems that we have going on in the world. It takes a level of astuteness to actually point out solutions to the problems that are going on around us. And I think that part of that is your heart, right? And I suppose the point of this point, which is really a good point, the point of this point is for us to figure out, like, what's driving your dinghy? Yeah. Welcome to Motion Church. What is driving your ship? What is the wave that is dictating the direction of your life? And I think if you're struggling to control your words, you're struggling to control your ability to talk about people, you're struggling your ability to have to get the last word or to make a point, if you're struggling pointing out solutions rather than problems, if you're struggling to call out the potential in people in spite of their obvious flaws, maybe it's a heart issue. Maybe the old Christian phrase, check your heart, right? Maybe we should check our hearts and see what's going on there. That is a starting place. Our words are just kind of, they're symbolic of what's happening in our hearts. So that's the first point. This is kind of on a personal level, what this looks like for us. Make sure if your words are loose and you've got the loose lips that sink ships, then maybe you need to check your heart, start there. So let's talk about it on kind of a more corporate level. So there's a French phrase, and I think I goofed it. It's called espirer, right? When you say anything French, you have to add the ha-ha-ha. Esprit. And there's one too many I's in there. That's my fault. I take full responsibility. Esprit de corps. And it literally means, this French word means the spirit of the body, right? So, and they would actually use this. The first time I heard about this phrase was a general was talking, and I'm so sorry about all these military things that happened for whatever reason, but get over it, okay? So it was a general talking about kind of the morale of his troops, and this was the phrase that he used, is espirer de corps. Can I get some feedback? Can y'all, on three, everybody go, ha, ha, ha. One, two, three. That's pretty good. Pretty good over here. A little weaker over here. It's all right. So just like it was when they were hanging these World War II posters all over the place, trying to boost morale, right? And they actually called it propaganda, but they used propaganda as a good thing. We see it less as a good thing now, but it is what it is, right? So what they were doing is they were hanging these posters to try to boost the morale of the group. And so they understood that their words had the ability to inspire or debilitate those around us. And what I see are several parallels between where they were and where we are. So they wanted to keep the morale of the army high so they could be more productive and successful, right? It makes sense. Like people who are happy, people who are encouraged, tend to work a little bit harder, and they're not entertained or they're not worried about superfluous things happening. That's 2 weeks in a row. I do cough, everyone. I have water. Thank you. What a good man. That is wife material right there. Husband material. Looking for a wife. Is that right? Is that how you say that? Okay, you know what I was saying. So they wanted to keep the morale of the troops. Sorry, dude. My bad. He's like, I'm never coming back. Never coming back. You'll be back next week with a wife. All right? Just kidding. So they wanted to keep the morale high. They wanted to keep the spirit of the body encouraged because encouraged people are more efficient, they're more effective, they work harder, and they're just not worried about stupid stuff, right? Things that don't actually matter. And so the definition of this spirit of the body, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it one more time, is a feeling of pride, fellowship, and common loyalty shared by members of a particular group. And the most obvious way to control this is conversation, like what we're talking about, right? The things that we talk about, I think we then focus on, and the things that we focus on, they have a way of, like, it works both ways. Not only what is inside gets outside, but what is outside then gets inside and then gets back outside, right? It's this process that we go through. So they wanted to control the conversation. And I think the same thing in many ways is true for us. We're kind of like a community of people, like an army, minus the tanks and 50 cals. Although that would be cool. I mean, next level community, right? I'm going to church where they have tanks and 50 cows. Maybe that would not be good because sometimes we are way too immature for all of that. So we're kind of like an army, right? We're a community of people, a community on a mission. That's what the church is. It's a community on a mission. And I think the words that we use toward each other, the words that we use with each other, even the words that we withhold from each other, sometimes good, sometimes bad. Sometimes there are words that I need to withhold from you, and other times there are words that I withhold that I should share with you, right? Like there are sins of, I've always heard this, and it's one of those things that kind of surfaces and makes sense from time to time, is there are sins of omission and sins of commission. There are sins that we commit, and there are sins that we commit by not doing things that we should do. There are words that we need to say, and there are words that we withhold that we should share with those who are around us, right? So we're on this mission, and all of the words that we speak or that we don't speak, they have an impact on the morale of the body, the spirit of the body. We would call it, in modern terms, the culture, right? The culture of our bodies. So we need to be cognizant. We need to be aware of the fact that our words have power towards each other, not just ourselves, not just those even directly or immediately connected to us, but the church as a whole and at large. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6, it says this, and this is so good. It says, let your speech always be with grace. And I read that and I'm like, anybody else? Because my speech is always seasoned with usually some fire, right? Not always with grace. Sometimes it's with like poison. Now, nobody else does this, right? Nobody else struggles with this. Sometimes my words are seasoned with, right? Sometimes my words are seasoned with immaturity. Sometimes my words are seasoned with selfishness. But our words should always means, I don't know if you know this or not, but all the time. That was a joke. Our words should always be seasoned with grace. And then it kind of gives like some imagery to it. It says, as though seasoned with salt. Now, some of you weirdos eat your food without seasoning. I don't know what's wrong with you. You're not from East Texas, right? Yeah, listen, we season and then we taste. We don't taste and then season. We season and then we taste. As a matter of fact, oddly enough, I don't normally carry this stuff around. Or do I? You just never know, right? So you season your words. I was going to try to pull it off, but I'm going to share with you guys where we're at. It's garlic powder. It was supposed to be salt. But you work with what you got, right? So we season. Should I make a mess? No, I ain't going to be able to do it because I got to clean it up. So we season our words with salt. Think about the flavor, kind of, again, the imagery of the flavor that it adds to what it is that we're about to partake. And I think when you see it like that, let our words be seasoned with grace, as with salt, with this flavor of encouragement, this flavor of inspiration, this flavor of I'm speaking to your potential rather than all of the problems that you've got in your life. And then it finishes up with this, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. I think that's really interesting because the conversations that we have will vary from person to person. I think it takes a level of maturity to understand where you're at with each person, what it is that each person needs, what it is that each person can handle for you to say to them. Like, the conversations that you have with somebody that you've known for a really long time are really different than the conversations that you have with somebody that you just met. Right? And what you can, the level of speaking to their potential will vary based on the strength of the relationship. And so I think kind of just as an aside, right, as a takeaway, as kind of this overarching theme, let your words be seasoned with grace. I don't know where you're at. I got a lot of work to do. I mean, a lot of work. Matter of fact, I think they just did the dirt work. There's not even a foundation there. I got a long, long way to go when it comes to letting my words be seasoned with grace. And the reason this is so important, let me kind of wrap up with just this encouragement and really just the truth of where we're at. Did you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but the world that we live in is harsh and cruel. You hear more and more stories these days about kids like 8, 9, 10, 12 years old who are being bullied because of the way they look, the way they dress, you know, the way they talk, anything, name it, because we live in a very harsh and cruel world. And it is emboldened by the fact that I can say something to you and never have to face you. We have these incredibly brave keyboard warriors who will tell everybody everything that they think, and there is no grace in the conversation, right? What if that's going on? We can't necessarily change the way the world works, the way the world is, the way the world operates. But you know what we can do? We can create a space
that's not like that. We can create a space that even when the world uses the power of their words for death, we choose the power of our words to speak life. We can create a space where it doesn't matter what everybody else says about you, and it doesn't matter the criticism that you experience based on the mistakes that you may have actually made. You can come into a place like this and be embraced and accepted in spite of where you've been, in spite of what you've done. Let's create a space that speaks life. I think this is probably, and this may be too much for some of you, if it is, I'm so sorry. Not really, but whatever. I felt sometimes you have to, like, I'm not gonna justify or explain what I just said. I just said what I said, okay? So there's this kind of monumental deal, basically, depending on how you feel about who is ultimately responsible for your life, happening this week. There's a thing called a presidential election. Now, again, I do not tend to get overly political, especially here, because that's not what this is about. I think what is most important is that we remember that it doesn't matter who is elected president, that Jesus is still on the throne. And there's not a single thing that's going to happen this week that's going to surprise him one way or the other. And you know what's so funny? It's like, man, we are just messed. We're kind of messed up when it comes to this stuff, because we put more emphasis, or we put more trust in the government than we do in God, which is unbelievable that we're even at this place, in this position, as followers of Jesus in the church. All of that to say, there are going to be plenty of opportunities this week for you to practice what you just heard. Right? One way or the other. Essentially, half of our country is going to be butthurt come Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or whenever all the ballots actually make it in. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Next year, who knows, right? Essentially, half of the country is going to be upset. And there are going to be words flying all over the place. Seasoned with grace. Sometimes the grace is what you withhold. You don't have to be right. You may be right, but you don't have to be right. Sometimes it's better to make a difference than it is to make a point. What'd your mama say? You ain't got nothing nice to say? Don't say anything at all. Boy, shut up. It is true. Don't sink the ship. Don't sink the ship. Don't sink the ship. You are not your politics. You are a follower of Jesus. And we are called to be the light that shines in the darkness. We have an incredible opportunity this week and the weeks to come, right? The months, the years ahead, to let our words, let our conversations be seasoned with grace. Let's create a space. Let's create a community where the spirit of the body is high. The morale is high because we encourage each other. It's not that we don't tell the truth to each other. It's just that we encourage each other. Sometimes encouragement is, hey, you're doing this thing that you shouldn't do. You're better than that. Instead of beating people over the head with the things that they already know that they, you know what I mean? Like, we beat ourselves up. The last thing I need you to do is pile on. But sometimes we encourage each other, and we can still call each other out of whatever it is that we're in we shouldn't be in. We can encourage each other. Let's keep the morale of the body high. Let's not sink the ships. Amen? Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you so much for modeling for us what this looks like. God, I can't imagine the things that you probably wanted to say that you didn't say. You were never afraid to speak truth, but you always let your words be seasoned with grace. God, help us to do the same. Help us, God, in our daily conversations, in our conversations with friends and families and even strangers. God, help us to consider whether we're sinking the ship or we're boosting the morale Help us to consider whether we're speaking life or we're speaking death, if we're building up or tearing down, if we're encouraging or discouraging, if we're inspiring or if we're debilitating. God, help us to choose life, to speak life. God, let our words be seasoned with grace. And the truth is, we can't do this without you. God, we have such a limited ability to control the things that we do, the things that we say. We have a part to play for sure. But God, we need your grace to let our words be seasoned with grace. God, help us to do this. Help us to do it not just, you know, in theory, in the weeks and months ahead, but God, help us to do it this week. Help us to put this into practice as we go about our everyday lives this week. Jesus, we love you. We're so thankful for you. And it's in your incredible name we pray. And everybody said, amen.